Welcome to the Dad's Night Podcast, where ridiculous becomes reality. We're your dad hosts. I'm Chris Parrish.
And I'm Tommy Reed.
This week, we're joined by former Notre Dame and Green Bay Packers running back Ryan Grant. We'll talk about his journey from suburban New York to the NFL, playing with both Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, and his focus on health and wellness, along with raising two girls. We'll also recap our evening at the new Sushi Roku and have some fall sports updates. This podcast is brought to you by the Believe Network.
I haven't heard that music in a long time. It still gets me fired up. I'm fired. I'm dancing.
I thought it was your ringtone, Tommy. You got to make it your ringtone.
I really should.
Yeah.
Look, I think we should just jump into the three dubs.
Let's
right
do
away.
It.
I'm excited. What are you excited about? Because, like, I know that I saw you. Was it last Monday?
It was last Tuesday.
Last Tuesday.
It was a big night for the pod, big night for all of us. So, opening up this week, Thursday is the grand opening. We got a new Sushi Roku and Boa.
That's right.
In. And FOP, Scott Van Cleve, set a bunch of us up. With reservations.
Yep.
On the house. A bunch of us did some damage.
I mean, it was kind of like you were testing your feet going into dinner. You're like,
yeah.
Is it that cold? Because you're like, is this free? At least I was. I was kind of like, what can't you order?
And they're
like,
I asked about seven times.
Yeah.
What's the etiquette when it comes to on the house?
Okay, put it like this. The etiquette that that my family of four had was $700 of damage.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll try everything on the menu.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I mean,
you did
like,
a great job. You were like the
really
mayor that night. Everybody was thanking you for setting this up.
It was great because I took out the little text and I blasted it out to like almost every dad I know in the South Bay. I was like, guys, I'm like, they wanted you to
come
eat. So they want to give it back to the community. We went in there, and I think I had literally every item on the menu, which, by the way, it was fantastic.
I mean, you were there for 2.5 hours. It was tremendous. It absolutely was tremendous.
Yes.
We were disappointed. We only did $550. But, you know, I don't eat dessert.
Disappointed.
Yeah, disappointed. Well, the Reeds set the standard. Yeah, I mean, the standard was actually a Boa the night before.
Well,
we got
Scott Van Cleve's tab at Boa was $1,200-something.
What are you guys eating?
Well, there at the steakhouse, they had like Wagyu beef and Japanese beef and everything.
It's all like $22 martinis.
I mean, at Sushi Roku, I had everything from, basically almost every appetizer that they had available. I said, I want to try it all, so I know everything. So you had your yellowtail, you had your, you know, spicy tuna.
Just all of it, right? Anything that they
got. Anything.
Anything. Everything.
It was just like, I mean, like, I was just shocked. But they were so cool about it.
Yeah.
So obviously, it's a big corporate company, but they want to give back and get the awareness out to the community. And that's what we did. We rocked and rolled.
I mean, we weren't there 3 minutes before Dawn came over to our table to order a drink
for
my wife.
We did exactly what they wanted us to do.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know?
Now, unfortunately, they're going out of business.
Exactly.
Operations are going to have to go out of business.
But we did tip really nice.
Tip.
So that's
tip.
What
there
it's all about. So the waiters knew that they're going to be taken care of.
Yeah.
You know? Gotcha. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. They know they're going to get a good tip. The people know they're going to get free food.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, that's
We love being influencers. It's the best.
It is great. I mean, as our other friend, Casey Edgar, knows, it's great to get free shit.
It is great to get free shit. Absolutely.
When you look
the way Casey looks.
Oh, yeah.
You know you're getting.
We should mention just off the top.
We do have
It's a little sexy in here right now.
Okay. We do. Yeah. This is a very good looking garage right now.
Yeah.
But we do have a FOP just as our first live.
Well, my dad.
Well, second.
Yeah.
But
the first one who's not my dad.
Well, he wasn't really an FOP then.
No, he is now, though.
Now he's, But we have our first FOP influencer
as
an audience member tonight.
Yeah.
So,
how you doing, Casey?
I'm doing great.
Little history here. We're really excited because, let me get into some other stuff before I start going off of the highway here into a different avenue.
It's too late.
It's too late. Really excited because our guest today I saw at a BCS game. Mm-hmm. Last weekend, and we had a really hard-fought game against a team that was much bigger than us, but we were faster, and I thought speed could always beat size. Mm-hmm. But one of the things when the kids started getting down was that you couldn't measure the heart.
Can't measure heart. Doctors have tried for centuries.
And the will. And we had some really big opportunities to get back in the game, and we took advantage of them. And we came back from being down like 14-0 to like 14-7 at the half, and then came back and won the game 26-20. But it was exhausting, and it was like, you know, it took out everything out of the players and the coaches. And as we're walking back, you know, going back to our cars, I see this very handsome fellow, and he came up to me and said, "Hey, you guys played a great game."
Right.
And I'll let you say what you said.
Yeah, I happened to randomly be on every Sunday and go to the track with my girls, and I usually don't really pay attention. I told you I don't really pay attention to a lot of the games there. Like, I see all the kids, it is fun, and I love their excitement, but I try to focus with my girls. And I happened to watch this game from the first play because the size difference was so big to me that I was like, this might be kind of hard. And the first play, they go up top. I think they missed the first play. Then I said it would be their best bet to just literally do the exact same, just go right up top again. They did it, and they scored. And I remember thinking, this might be a long day for your team.
Right.
And, you know, of course, I don't know you at this point, but I'm watching, and you're down, but I see you. Something happened. It was a play that happened, and I saw you coaching your player up. You weren't yelling. You were literally saying, hey, if this happens in this situation, this is what you do with your hips, blah, blah, blah. This is how you correct it. And I'm thinking in my mind, this is what you need. Like, you're actually making these guys better. Regardless of what happens in the game today, like, you're developing these players, and they'll have a better understanding of next situations and if they put in these different type of plays. And then as the game keeps going on, you guys are fighting. I think you picked it off to win. Like, yeah,
you
at
did.
The end of the day, like, their last chance. And I remember you saying, like, yo, one stop and game's over. And then you picked it off. And after I was like, that's how you do it. Like, that was a big time win. And I remember thinking, I have to tell one of the coaches to tell you guys after the game that that's a big time win. And I saw what you guys were doing, not knowing who you are or any of that capacity. And so I stopped you as you were walking over. And I'm like, hey, man, I just want to let you know I saw that. That was big time, man. You guys worked your butt off. And I know that was a big win. And then you're like, hey, are you Ryan?
Yep. Yeah, that's right. That was great. It was very serendipitous.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it definitely was.
For you to be there, see that, and then to have this connection, you know, with Casey and everything, it's an honor. I'm really excited about it. But it felt really good to kind of hear that from another dad's perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and a big time athlete like yourself.
I don't know about big time.
Yes, you are big time. And it just felt really good and made Van and I really, really proud to be coaches because, you know, we're not getting paid. We're doing a lot of dedication, and it just felt very validating of why we're doing it. And we try, you know. So
it's impressive
thank you for
and commendable a lot, you guys. I can't watching dads and parents the way they do, like, be as involved and engaged. And that's what it's really about. Language is involved. It's the engagement of, like, how enthusiastic and the way, you know, showing, as we know, like, when you can be as excited or more excited for children in a capacity to help them, yo, it does wonders for their spirit and their, you know, their, like, wherewithal and fortitude to continue to push and everything like that, especially when, like, the ups and downs of a game, competition.
The ebbs and flows. You know, but that made me really, really excited, and it's an honor to have you here. Chris, I know that you have some really good stuff. I know you're really excited. You had a big auction this past weekend.
We did. So I spent the weekend at my kids go to American Martyrs in the church there. Ah, that sounds good. That sounds refreshing. It's a big thing called the Parish Fair, and so this year, FOP Sarah Kersey thought it would be a great auction item to someone could bid to win a spot on the Dad's Night podcast.
Oh, sweet.
So, you know, most people are unlike you where you get to come in here and it's an honor for us. These people wanted to pay for that honor to spend an hour with us. And it wasn't Amy who bid on this, but I think it went for 100.
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Casey charged me for this.
Casey. You know, we get 50% of that. And so, yeah, $150. We don't even know who it is yet.
Hey.
And we were in the car driving to Costco in, like, December coming up with this stupid thing.
Yeah.
And then we started this thing in February. Now we got people paying hard-earned cash to come hang out in here. And who even knows what we're going
to
talk
about. And that was a donation to American Martyrs.
Donation to American Martyrs.
That's great, man.
We really appreciate it. Can't wait to meet this person.
Sweet.
Yeah. Who knows what we'll talk about? Anything they want. So that was exciting. 2 days at the fair. I had a soccer game yesterday, Tommy, that I coached for Laney's team. I had the complete opposite experience of you. It was tough. These girls had been at the fair for 2 days, and
that will do it.
So when you talk about having patience and coaching, and it's just kids and what do they learn from it? That was a big one.
What did you learn from it? That's what.
Yeah. What?
Well, here's my tip and trick for you.
Yeah.
Get some Skittles.
And no, that's the last thing they needed. I should have cracked a keg at halftime. I had four girls crying at one point. Oh, it was
I'm sorry about that.
So you know what? It's all right.
There's
tomorrow's
no
another day.
That's what you should have hit him with that. You know?
Yeah.
No crying. No, it's not baseball, but
it's
no
like the end
soccer.
Of Boogie Nights. Like, this is just awful. I don't want to watch this anymore. Anyway.
Well, that's. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
But look, you have next week on.
We got next week. Get right back on the field. We got practice.
Yep.
We got stuff to work on. It'll be good.
That's it. That's great.
Yeah. Something's Brewing, brought to you by Pommels. Pommels is an incredible line of cannabis-infused beverages. They have Pommels spirits in two different strengths, depending on if you are new to cannabis or not. I'm new. And you can pour them in as a substitute for alcohol in your favorite cocktails. Or try the Pommels ready-to-drink cocktails like the Peach and Guava Bellini, Tommy. Or the Tropical Mai Tai. Order Pommels to be delivered next day to your house at Pommels.com or get it at your local dispensary. And Tommy, if you go to Pommels.com and type in dads, you get 20% off your delivery.
That's right. At checkout, if you put in dads, you get 20% off your next day free delivery.
It is a tremendous beverage. I got a buddy I was just talking to last week, Todd, FOP. He's in Denver. And he's just going to be taking probably a permanent break from alcohol, mostly for losing weight and feel better and your head and all that stuff. And Jared is helping him get some Pommels in Colorado because he's not going to be there for 30 days.
Sweet.
I said, you're not going to believe the stuff. The one thing we were missing was a solution for people who like mixed drinks and alcoholic beverages like that.
Right.
And,
makes you feel like you're still part of the party. And
absolutely.
It's great, man.
Absolutely. You just can't have 50 of them like we do with the Keystones.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
Well,
I just want to say, if nobody has told you, you definitely have a future if you want in voiceovers.
Oh, thank you.
That was a great read.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was
Amy
that was
said I got a face for radio. So I've been getting a lot of compliments today.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that, Ryan. I appreciate it. Well, this is the end of the
pod. You should have seen Casey's face as
you
were doing it.
New,
Casey was literally like, Casey was like,
I mean,
wow.
This could be a side hustle for him over here, being on the podcast. Like, this is great.
He's our favorite guest so far.
Ever.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
We'll join us next week when we have Ryan Grant.
Yeah. Replacing Tommy forever. Let's just bring in our guest right now, the one and only Ryan Grant, a high school player that came from North New Jersey in Ramsey's own Don Bosco Prep, where my brother went to high school and our friend of the pod, Casey Egger, went to high school.
This is crazy. This is like 3,000 miles away.
This is on the other side of the country.
And there's a great pizzeria, if you're ever in that area, called Kinsley's, very famous, as famous as the high school. It became a really popular football school probably when I was in high school, from 88 to 92, around that area. Started becoming really, really all the.
That's not true.
You went to high school when you were 10?
I'm taking all credit.
Okay, well, there you go.
I'm taking all credit regards to my class. I won't take all credit just about me being there, but it was not popular.
Bergen Catholic
and St. Joe's mopped up on Bosco.
Yes, okay.
Until.
You guys,
Coach Toll, and we came along.
Coach Toll,
he changed the entire culture.
Casey, you played on the team with Ryan.
I did. Yeah.
Nice. And this is before you went to Penn.
Yeah.
Nice.
I got stories for days about Casey. Yeah.
What?
I listen. Not to big up Casey, but I have strong core memories of Casey being one of the toughest dudes ever. Because
what happened?
You move to California, listen, it does make itself. But he, Casey was smaller. He's by no means anywhere near the size that he looks now.
Wow.
Casey was a small individual, but just a scrappy dude. And literally watching him, I just had a level of respect. He's a year younger than me, and just seeing him just be willing to put his nose in there, just bust dudes up. Super, and for, he knows me. I'm all about toughness and work ethic. So seeing him being able to do that was really an admirable thing, and it just earned my respect. So Casey's been my dude, literally, just because of how he worked.
Casey Edgar.
And man, we were able to do some really good things with Coach. He changed the whole culture. Literally, it's like, you know, in today's day and age, it probably wouldn't have been acceptable in many of the things he did. But you know, if you talk to anybody that played for him, he changed their lives.
And you were New Jersey, Mr. Player of New Jersey.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I was Player of the Year, USA Today, and stuff like that. And then you were
already a commitment to Notre Dame at that point?
No, I didn't commit to Notre Dame until like a couple weeks before signing day. And actually, I didn't even I, I don't even know if I announced it. I didn't announce it until actually, like, we had something in school where they were like doing the best. And I remember they announced it over the intercom in school. It was a really kind of a funny thing. Funny, I actually wanted to go to Michigan. So,
Oh, hell yeah.
I actually, what's funny, I was a soft commitment for them and we had a falling out. And not too many people know about this.
Typical.
And they were keeping me like abreast of the situation. And they were like, listen, you know, we want you to commit. And I, out of respect to my parents, I said, I can't commit until my parents see the school. And I said, I know they'll fall in love with it. I know they'll be fine. I know like that it's a phenomenal school. The programs are good. And, of course, the football is strong. But I knew the school itself was really strong. But I was like, out of respect for my – I can't just make a commitment without them going to see the university.
For sure, yeah.
And the way our season was, we played a lot of Friday night games and Saturday night games. So I didn't want to waste the weekend. So I was like, no, we'll wait till my bye. And my bye was until, like, I think that year was, like, week 8 or something. And I remember my – I called my mom the morning of – like going to school, and I was like, hey, can you handle all the flight stuff this week for that we can call out? She's like, okay, cool. So when I called her on the payphone at Bosco, I was like, hey, did you handle everything? She was like, yeah, we'll talk about when you get home. I was like, okay, cool. And when I got home, I remember my parents were separated, but my father was very much like every day with me, but he was at the house, and I was like, what's he doing here? Yeah. And when I got there, I was like, hey, mom, like, what's going on? And she was like, nothing. And I was like, did you, like, is everything canceled? She was like, all right, so let's talk about that. She was like, I called them, and they were like, yeah, we'll put you on, you know, with the coach, and we'll get everything squared away. And the coach was like, yeah, we can bring you in for a visit, but we don't have a scholarship for Ryan anymore. And my mother, not knowing the culture of, excuse me, of recruiting and all that, she panics.
Yeah.
You know, so she's like, what do you mean? Like, what? Right. And he's like, she's like, well, we're running low on scholarships, which they had been telling the truth. They only had 3 scholarships left, and they were holding out for wide receiver, which was Braylon Edwards, and two defensive players. And so she was like, no, I'll commit for him. He was doing it for us. Like, how could you do this to a young 17-year-old kid? Like, how, like, typical he's just Michigan. A young kid trying to, you know, not
sure
knowing
this one.
Yeah, like, listen, no, I'm sure. And I remember literally in that moment, because I kind of understood, my mother was like, no, we'll figure it out. And I was like, nah, it's all good. Like, that's part of the business. And
yeah,
like, I'll just go to a school that plays them and I'll just destroy them.
And so did you ever have that opportunity when you played at Notre Dame?
Yeah. So my sophomore year we played and I had like 130 and 2 touchdowns.
Whoa, boom. Right
and
back at
you. And then we beat
them
in overtime. And then my junior year, it's all good because we'll make up for it. My junior year, we went there and they beat us like the worst beating ever, 38-0. It was terrible.
Well, that's what they do. They get you back.
But Ohio State was, when they offered me, I probably should have went there. When Cooper left, Tressel came in.
Yeah.
I loved Cooper. And that's all right. Cooper.
Michigan fans. Michigan fans love Cooper.
Yeah,
as well.
I know you do.
I know. But I loved him. You know why? Because I did like, in the sense of the running back aspect.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I loved Ohio State.
Dude.
When my family and my uncle, my father and my uncle went to a Ohio State visit, they were everybody's thinking, oh, you a running back, Big Ten?
Oh, yeah.
That's my style?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm going first round.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So it's like, oh, this is where we do it. And then there were some things academically that they kind of were like, eh, my mom wasn't feeling it. Yeah, they kind of dropped the ball on certain aspects conversationally with my mom.
Yeah.
And in hindsight, my mom now understanding, like, the culture of the sport and everything opportunity-wise that comes along with it, she's like, no, I understand why you... And now in hindsight, I don't regret any aspect. Notre Dame made me into a man. I learned so much. But if I had to do it all over again, I'd probably go to Ohio State.
That's good to know. Especially in today's environment with the NIL, everything, that's a much different
period. Yeah.
I was saying this a couple, maybe with Ty or something last week, but like for me, I never played sports. Yeah. I'm not good at any of that stuff. But like... If Brian and Kelly can just be like, fucking, I'm out and the season's not even over, then I don't give a shit what any coach thinks about a guy switching schools. Like, if it thinks it's going to be better for him.
Yeah, I don't even, like, money, it's, you know? Absolutely. Like, I don't, how do you as a coach, though, create a culture and dynamic?
Right.
Is it right? Like, yo, you have to, if anything goes wrong, the child, you know, the young man can literally just say, I'm out.
Your career at Notre Dame, I mean, you had an interesting career because you had many different coaches. You had Bob Davey, Ty Willingham.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going through talk about, like,
I
you could have gone.
I had, what's my guy for 24 hours? who was the coach that we had? O'Brien? What is that? The Georgia Tech coach that came?
Oh, yeah. George O'Leary.
O'Leary.
Yeah.
O'Leary
for like
24
days.
Yeah, it was like, it was yeah, like, I mean, yeah, like 2 days. Something like,
because he lied on his resume.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, like.
Well, there's no way to verify.
That's an
this.
Opportunity where you could have gone and said, you know, I'm out of here because you guys are, you know, but.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's
the
funny.
The transfer portal wasn't like that,
though. I remember after our first meeting with O'Leary, when Coach Davies got fired, when Bob got fired, and they said we're going to hire this guy, O'Leary had such a bad rep in regards to how he treated players.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the first, oh, it was crazy. There's like videos of him.
Hitting,
like he's the coach that literally had the tackle stand up in the pocket and get smashed by defensive players because he was like, I want you to see what it feels like to be a quarterback. And they got it on camera. God. Yeah, it was nuts.
Well, we haven't heard from him since.
And yeah, yeah. And his first meeting, he was like calling guys out in our team meeting. First time meeting guys. So I remember afterwards, all of us were having conversations like, we're like, are you going to transfer? And I remember I couldn't really be a part of that conversation because I had played as a freshman. So I lost eligibility. And I'm like, it doesn't make sense for me to go. Like, I actually feel confident about like what I can do, even though I don't really know what the system's going to look like. I have no idea like what it's going to look. It's like, nah, I got to kind of like tough it out. Nowadays, it's like, I ain't toughing anything. I just...
You go on to then get drafted by the Giants, Giants.
Free agent. I was a high priority. Okay, I didn't get drafted.
You got signed by the Giants.
Yeah, signed with the Giants. Yeah.
That then trade you.
Yeah, signed with the Giants.
To the Packers.
2 years, and then the third year after literally the first day of the regular season, you know, they're letting guys know they made the team, didn't make the team. I get a call from the general manager, Jerry Reese, at the time. And... actually, at the time, he wasn't general manager. His first year or something. But he called me telling me, Ryan, you know, I'd come back from injury, too. And he was like, you're a giant guy. Like, you're the type of guy we want. You worked your butt off. And you're everything. The type of man we want, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, great, man. He's like, yeah, you made the team. And he's like, and it's bittersweet because in the same breath, he's like, you've just been traded. And it's interesting because that was, like, my welcome to the NFL. Not getting drafted was welcome to the business before it's a sport.
Right.
Because I realized, like, I'm watching dudes get drafted and I know I was better than, and just like, okay, cool. But it was devastating for my family because they, you know, they wanted that to be an experience that I had. But I just thought like, oh, they just messed up and I'll just have to prove that, like, they'll figure it out. And I knew that if I got the opportunity, I could perform at a high level. And so it was really good because my first 2 years in the league, it gave me an opportunity to kind of see what I needed to work on and change with to actually succeed in the NFL that I didn't get a chance to do in college, which is most guys don't get because if they get drafted in, they go right into whatever. So their deficiencies usually get seen. But I got a chance to actually work on my deficiencies without getting on the field. It was like I was like that rookie quarterback that didn't have to play. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was like, I just develop and work on whatever I want to work on and make those attributes positives and then work my butt off to make the team. And then I get traded. And I remember my uncle, it was really funny because as I'm on the phone with Jerry Reese, my uncle's in the side room on the phone with my cousin. And he's like, yeah, we in there. He made the squad again. We a Giant. We in there. And I had to yell, no. And he's like, what? And I'm like, I just got traded. And he's like, to where? And I said, Green Bay. Excuse my language, but he's like, what the fuck is
yeah,
Green
exactly.
Bay? And I'm like, I don't know. Brett Favre.
Yeah.
That's all because that point, like, the only thing I know. Like, I know Brett Favre is there. I know Cheesehead, but I don't know anything about it.
Right.
And fortunately, right after I got off the phone, they said the Packers are going to be caught. And they said, you know, this is honestly probably a better opportunity for you because even though you know how you are ranking-wise, talent-wise, they have financial obligations. And so in the stable, we had a bunch of backs. It was me, Derek Ward, Brandon Jacobs. They drafted Ahmad Bradshaw. They had signed Reuben Drones. There were a lot. Like we had five backs that were badasses that could all play. And I knew I was better than – I felt like I was better than a lot of them, but didn't matter.
Right.
Like I actually was, from a commodity aspect, the least amount of money. And basically they said they offered for me was worth more than what they had. But –
wow.
So I get traded. They tell me, they're like, oh, they're going to call you in a little bit. And they called me right away, literally minutes afterwards. And fortunately, it was Green Bay because there were no more flights out that were going to get me into Green Bay same day. They were trying to fly me in same day.
Oh, man.
And I was like, damn, I don't even get a chance to like see my family, like actually, you know, like process it before I leave. They were like, no, we're gonna put you in a car, and we're gonna we'll fly you out, fly you in Milwaukee, put you in a car, put the playbook in the car. You read the playbook on the way down because the next morning we had practice. I didn't even get a chance to do that. I flew in 6 a.m., flew into Green Bay, landed in Green Bay right before practice, went from the stadium to the equipment room.
Jesus.
Shook hands with, saw Mike in the office, just shook Mike's hand, went right to the equipment room, got fitted, went right on the field. And the first thing they said to me, my coach said to me, was, don't let Brett Favre get touched. That was my position coach, Edgar Bennett. First thing he said to me wasn't secure the ball. It wasn't make sure it was don't let Brett Favre get touched.
Wow.
That set the stage for like, okay, what priority is here?
So let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah. I have thoughts about Brett Favre.
So Brett Favre's there. It's his last year in Green Bay that year, correct?
No. Yeah, that was last 2007.
Talk to me about like what that locker room was like, having both Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers in that locker room with the different energies of everything.
The locker room with Brett when he was in it, because, you know, Brett had his own locker.
Wow.
You know, you ever heard that story? Brett had his own? He didn't
hang out.
He'd hang out, but he was like passing through. You don't even realize it at some point in time. I was like, wait a minute, where's Brett? And they'd be like, oh yeah, Brett doesn't shower with us. Like, not to say we're looking to see where a guy shower, but like,
it's still good.
He actually was with, he had a locker with the equipment staff and the coaches. He had a whole nother locker.
Oh my God.
But Brett was a lot of fun. He was silly, you know? And it's funny because as my role changed, I got a chance to kind of see more and more a part of that and be a part of that. You know, I went from basically having to earn and, you know, reestablish myself with a team that doesn't know me. They don't even know who I am. I got to, you know, start fresh from special teams to like a role player, and them saying like, okay, you have a couple little packages here and there that you'll come in, and then I'm like, okay, you're moving this. Now you'll do third down. And then it was like, okay, you're going to do all third down and you'll have a couple plays here and there on first down. And then when I became the guy, Brett was like, all right, now we're going to have some conversation. We'll talk about some things.
That's cool.
Well, you saw it, like the development. And I remember, and it really, the like final straw was I got invited, Red, who I love, still the equipment manager in Green Bay. Phenomenal. One of the best men I've ever met. He says to me after one of the meetings, he's like, RG, what are you doing for like lunch, dinner after practice? And I'm like, what? Like the cafeteria? And he's like, nah, come in the back, come in the equipment room after. And I'm like, okay. And I come back, and it was Thursday night, and we were playing like either Sunday night or Monday night. So Boomer was there, and all the guys were getting ready to, like, you know, they're interviewing guys before the game that's gonna happen. And Brett had catered this like fancy ass like 5-course meal. There's a chef like actually like boiling. It's like this gumbo. It was crazy. And I'm like, all the like a bunch of the starters are sitting back there eating. And I'm like, is this what y'all do every week? And they're like, yeah, welcome. Like, you're in the club now.
Oh, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
So I, you know, not knowing, I'm still young, dude. So I like walk in, and I'm like, I gotta get back to meetings though. Can I take this? And they're like, yeah, you take it. So I walked in my meetings with like all this food and all the guys. And I remember at this time, Kuhn hadn't made it back there yet. And he was like, what the hell is that, RG? Like, where'd you get that from? And my coach just said, hey, man, you want to get an opportunity to get that type of food, you got to ball out. He said, right now, RG's balling out. So that was kind of like the step where it was like, all right,
awesome.
Conversation.
So you guys, that was 07, right? So
yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, I was a Cowboys season ticket holder that year. We went 13-3.
Yeah.
And then we lost.
So did
the
we.
Giants.
We went 13-3. Yeah. That was a barn burner in Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was when Brett got hurt for a little bit. Aaron had to come in. And they were like, that's when Collinsworth made that comment about, like, I don't know if they're going to really do that well with Aaron at the helm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who
yeah.
said that?
Chris Collinsworth made a statement
basically saying, like, Aaron had come in, you know, something happened with Brett. Aaron came in and made a couple plays, like scored or whatever, but it was kind of inconsistent.
Yeah, yeah.
And he made a statement like, you know, the Packers have gotten really comfortable with having such a high level of quarterback. I don't know what's going to happen these next couple of years. And it's like, yeah.
Announcers love Brett Favre.
Yeah.
All of his interceptions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's it like playing in the frozen tundra? I mean, like, it's like, first off, how are the fans? Are they like the best fans in the NFL?
They are the best. And I know everybody's biased, but I tell everyone, if you are a Packer fan or if you're a fan of football and the culture, go to a Packers game.
Yeah.
Really?
Go to Lambeau. Because the experience is the greatest mix of hometown, small town football with a big primetime professional.
Yeah, the most famous game. Because at the football stadium we have.
Yeah, when you think about it, you're never going to see a professional team in a market like this ever again, because it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So the fact that they're still able to keep and have that nostalgia and everything that comes along with it, it's literally the stadium is in neighborhood. Like, you're parking across the street. Like, you know, it's very much a college experience with pro football. And we used to say, like, yeah, there's a pace that is different in the Midwest. There's a pace that's different in Wisconsin. But the only thing that the pace is the same as everywhere is the speed of the football.
Right.
And I've never met, and I've been fortunate that I've been a part of some good organizations, that have won and do things at a high standard. And the Packers are no different, where every single person involved in that organization, from the seamstress to the groundskeeper, is doing everything they can to put the guys in the best position to win.
That's awesome.
And you still root for the Packers.
Yeah.
I mean, I read your we all thinking what was happening yesterday with the Jets. I read your tweet.
Yeah, about it. We're still trying to figure out what's happening.
I told
my mom, and my mom, I was on FaceTime with my mom, and I'm like, did you hear what happened with the Packers game? And I was like, no. I said, they got mopped up. And she was like, what? It's 2 weeks in a row. What's going on? And I said, yeah, but guess by who? And when I said the Jets, listen, we're from New York. So
at home. I know.
It's like a multiverse. What are you talking about here? It doesn't make any sense. And at home, in Lambeau.
Right.
Yeah, so we're just gonna let that go, and we're just going to.
Got to move on.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of football left, as they say.
Okay, so then in 2010, you did go to the Super Bowl,
right?
We went to see them. You guys beat the Steelers.
Yep.
What was that like to, dream about it as a kid, and you get to now playing for the Green Bay Packers?
It was kind of skewed, because my goals with football were actually a little different than most people. I actually haven't achieved any goal that I had. My goal was to win a state championship in high school. We lost twice. My goal was to be the top five back in the nation. I was number six. My goal was to get drafted into the NFL. I didn't get drafted. I went in as a free agent. My goal was not to win a Super Bowl. My goal was to play in the Super Bowl. I didn't play. And so it was hard, but it wasn't hard. The Super Bowl aspect wasn't hard. It was the NFC Championship that was the hardest thing. Because it was one of those moments in understanding, once you get to the league, you understand how hard it is to win. And it's like, no matter how good you are, it is hard to win. So when you get to that stage where it's like you're able to put it all together, I was looking around at all our guys, and we had a lot of guys hurt that year. Like, basically, it was really impressive, because I think we had like 13 starters or something crazy that went down to IR. We had our own locker room in the Super Bowl. We literally had to have, there were so many guys. And you recognize the perspective starts to come in. I'm like, damn, some of these veterans and these older guys, and I didn't think I was that old at that time, but some of the older guys, I'm like, oh man, I don't know if I'm gonna get a chance to play with these guys again, because this might be the last time. And that's where it becomes the emotional aspect, where it's hard. The Super Bowl, I'm pumped for everybody. We're just ready. We're in it. We want it. I just want guys to get it done. And we're doing everything we can to help that win, everything like that. But the NFC Championship was hard. In Chicago, whooping up, beating Chicago and them, went like that. And the culture of ball.
Was that Cutler?
Yeah, it's always been Cutler.
Yeah.
we made livings off of Cutler. But yeah, the culture with football, and anybody who's played ball understands that there's so much going on, and it takes so much to win, from coaches to players, that if you're not actually playing, it is easy to be overlooked, because there's so many dynamics of it, so much energy that it takes just to get the guys that are playing ready to go on the same page and everything like that, that you can kind of be like, almost, we used to call it like tumbleweed. So there were a few of us that were kind of watching like, damn, yo, we're just overlooked. And understandably, it's like, listen, we didn't physically put in any work. So you got to find your roles and find like where you can support. And that's honestly, it teaches like how to be a team, and like, the sportsmanship. Because it's really easy for guys to
get bitter and sour.
Yeah, get bitter and you see it. Like, I don't care what anybody says. You see it where guys get bitter of guys stepping up and taking other positions, where it's like, this is, especially for guys, like, my whole life I've been training for this one point. So it was a phenomenal experience. But also, Casey knows, I only care about, I love when Marshawn, you say, I want to smoke, because that's all I care about, like playing. I'm not really a spectator and stuff.
Right.
I want all the smoke. Like, I'm about that action. Like, just, yeah. Yeah. I like playing, you know, playing the game and everything like that. So watching my guys get after it was cool, but not as.
Did you guys have an inkling to know that Aaron Rodgers was going to be the player that he became?
Absolutely. Anybody that had been on that field and practiced with Aaron, absolutely knew.
Wow.
Aaron would do things on the practice field as the scout quarterback that the defensive coordinators would, and the head coach, and Mike would be like, Aaron, stop. The opposing quarterback can't do that.
Oh, nice.
Like, you can't, awesome. You can't make that throw. You can't do this. You can't, like, no, you can't do that, because it's not actually giving us a good look. He was, of course, athletically gifted, and then so cerebral.
Really?
And, yeah, and the guys that can self-correct, and not self-correct from a sense of, like, well, this is how they teach. No, self-correct in a sense of what's going to work best for them and how they take their abilities and then apply them on the field. Those are the guys that you see that are like, oh, they're on another level.
Wow.
And Aaron, so was, cool. Aaron was one of those guys.
To have been in the huddle with both Aaron and Brett Favre, that's just like, that's...
I don't know, but...
That's so cool.
You're talking about who's the common denominator?
You are. I'm just
saying.
Another
one, too, a high school quarterback. Who was one of... Yeah, so even thing. Yeah. One of Aaron's best friends, Steve Levy. I'll always give you love, Steve. You are my guy. He was our high school quarterback. He's a bad man, too. Yeah.
So he went to Cal?
Yeah, went to
what
Cal.
What a team, man. You went to ND. He went to Cal.
Yeah.
Don Bosco Prep.
Don Bosco Prep. Ramsey,
6'1", 226, Steve Levy.
Wow. That's so fun.
Played linebacker. So, yeah, he's a bad man. He's a bad man, boy. Talk about toughness.
So let's talk about being a dad. How many kids do you have?
I have two daughters.
And what are their ages?
8 and 5, Steel and Sage.
Wow, you are in the thick of it, my friend.
I know.
Get
but,
ready.
But see, the good part is that now you can travel with them. Because now I think once the second one is 5 years old, you're kind of like, okay, now we can start doing some good stuff.
I've been traveling with them forever. Yeah, sometimes a little tougher than others, but we...
well, that is a great one right there. Let's talk about traveling. What's it like, you know, going with two girls into traveling, because obviously you're on the road a lot.
Yeah.
How do you travel with them? And like, what are some key tips and tricks that you're like, hey, I know I'm going on the road with them. What do you do to get ready for traveling with them?
I let their mother pack their bags.
Because
I don't pack very well. So understanding what you do well and what you don't. Making sure that they have their key items, and what that is really just paying attention to your children. If you pay attention to their spirit, in the sense of, you know, if you're, when your children like to draw, make sure they have paper and make sure they have things to color and draw with, so that you're not, you're giving them tools that when they get in those moments where they're like, it's like, no, this is what you go to. Awesome. We do live in a day and age of, you know, technology. The screen time, the technology and everything. So fortunately, a lot of these flights have screens.
Yep.
That's always been. I will tell you, there's a certain privilege that my children have experienced, because we flew on a plane the other day, and most of the flights have not been, there hasn't been layovers, so they haven't been smaller planes that much. But we flew on a plane the other, a couple months ago, we went to Arkansas for a camping trip, and I had to fly through Atlanta to Little Rock. And the flight from Atlanta to Little Rock was a smaller plane, and it didn't have a TV. Oh, yeah. And my daughters, they were acting like it was a relic. They were like, look, what is this? And I'm like, oh, goodness gracious, you guys are literally showing the privilege that you have. But, listen, we make sure they sleep. Sometimes night flights are good.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one.
Let them sleep through the night, especially if they're, you know, if they're those type of kids. Getting them up in the morning. But my kids have been flying at such a young age. The girls have been flying at such a young age that they actually look forward to it. And the reason why is because they know that whatever experience we're flying, it's going to come with a lot of love and excitement.
Awesome.
So that's really, and that's why we travel. That's, you know, I think that's why you want to make sure your kids are experiencing things, whether it's things that you haven't experienced or things that you want to share that you have. Yeah, so we make sure that there's... I'm big on... Listen, man, be enthusiastic about life with your kids. Because that's why you have... That's what it's for.
Yeah, show them the things that you love, right?
Yeah, like, yo, be about what you love. Be and show them how exciting life is. I was like, and they'll pick up on that. And then they'll figure out what they want to be excited about in life. And then you'll, you know... That's... What's the point? What else is...
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
How do you do daddy daughter dates with each of them and separately, or do you do them both together? Like,
we switch sometimes, and I really that kind of I let them determine, because sometimes they'll say, "Hey, I just want a daddy. Can I just have some time with you?" You know, Steel, my oldest, is kind of in the mood right now. You know, my youngest is a little rough sometimes. She's a little annoying. Yeah. She's five. You know, exactly.
She's as little siblings.
I am little sibling as well, yeah. So that I get that. So there are sometimes where she'll say, "Dad, can I just have some me and you time?" And yeah, absolutely, we'll do that. And then Sagey, of course, will say, "Well, I want some time with you." Yeah, I want that. So you give it out, and then other times we do stuff together. So I try to allow them to kind of, when they let me know, "Hey, Dad, can I get some time?" Cool, we'll do that. Yeah. I try not to just assume, because there are moments when I assume, and then they're like, "Oh no, leave me alone. We don't want it." Yeah. So
we had the kids were out of school today because we had this fair at school, They give Monday off, and so Amy and I kind of split up. So I had the boy today. We did a little Top Golf, and then we went to North End over by FOP Matt Green's house, And then we went and played pickleball just at the club, just hitting back and forth and stuff. But he was just so happy to like just not share me. And it's like, I could never get, we could do whatever you want. Like, I could never get sick of this. And then, of course, I miss my daughter. And you know, but I just think having that one-on-one alone time where there's no chance for them to bicker and stuff. And you get to really understand what they like and what they want to do.
And you see the different dynamics. Sometimes the dynamics don't show up as much in regards to the type of individual they are because they're sharing it and all that stuff. But when it's just one-on-one, it's like, What do you want to do? You start to see the excitement in regards to all the eyes on them, like you said. So,
And like they step up their game. I feel like at times, you know, like my younger one, when she has like alone time, she acts like a 50-year-old woman. You know what I mean? Like it's completely different. You're like, where is this person? Like when a couple of minutes, you guys were screaming at each other. You know, what do you like to do with your 8-year-old Steel? Like she's like, "I want some," like, so, where do you, like, what's your good spot that you're like, and she gets so excited about?
My 8-year-old, anything creatively. That's my artist. And so I can sit with her, and it's funny, we have this interesting dynamic. My firstborn, she's my heart.
Of course.
You know, she changed my life. You know, she made as serious as I was about ball and my craft, and I was a hard, tough guy. Casey, you know, like I, you know, she just chips and chips and chips away at all that, and literally, she made everything look silly. And it's funny, my daughter, she actually doesn't like watching any of my football highlights. The first time she saw a highlight of me, she started crying, and she said this, and this is a little wacky for some people. She said, "I waited a really long time for you to stop doing that. Don't ever do that again."
She's going to get hurt.
My daughter was born 2 years after I retired, or a year after I retired. So the fact that she said, "I waited a really long time for you to stop playing that," is like, okay. And she's never seen me on a field. I went to Green Bay, like she was 3 years old or 4 years old, and I went to Green Bay to do... every couple of years, they bring me back for, like, the alumni of a game. So I was doing some speaking. I had FaceTimed her while I was on the field, and she started freaking out because she was like, "I thought you said..." And I'm like, "Blah, blah, 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 blah. I'm not playing. I'm not doing anything." And she has this, like, fear that I'm going to go back in this space. And she's the most protective person in my life. Oh. And in the same breath, the hardest person.
Sure.
Like, she's definitely like my mother in the sense of she will say, "Dad, you know, Dad, aren't you supposed to do, you know, you're supposed to do this." But she's just now starting to come along in the sense of she can hear people talk about me in the sense of like, "Well, you know what your daddy used to do?" Because I said, it's like, they think I'm just like this soft dad. I'm no, I used to be a killer. you don't know, I used to be. And they're like, yeah. Like my daughter said to me the other day, we were talking about something. And she said, she was coloring. And she said, looked at me and said, "You're the most sensitive person I know, Dad." Like matter-of-factly, and then like put her head down. And it kind of triggered me at first. And I was like, "What? Like, you don't know who I am? Like, what? I'll rough you up."
I'm not sensitive.
And Portia was like, "Ooh, that kind of like that touched something in you, huh? And I said, actually, you're right. And then I changed my, I said, you know what, Steele? I actually really appreciate that.
Aww.
Because the word sensitive didn't even exist in my vocabulary before you came.
Yeah.
And if I'm the most sensitive person you know, that means you see the work that I'm putting in.
Right.
So I'll take that and I'll own it.
Because that was a negative word when you were in your career. And now afterwards, you're like, that's the most positive thing I could ever hear from you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm still struggling with the most positive. Sensitive, but, but yes, it is 1,000%. They change and they open up access to parts of you that you didn't even know existed. Well, at least for me. And they are allowing and giving me grace in areas that were super underdeveloped.
What traditions are you giving her now that you still want yourself to instill into her, into your daughters?
A lot of these are things that were passed to me from my mother and my father. My mother was 1,000% focused on our spirit and supporting our spirit. And, paying attention to who we are as children, and me and my brother were very different spirit-wise, and so we never went to the same schools, which is not the easiest, but we were two different learners, two different types of individuals, and in the same breath, very similar, but she honored that aspect of us, and for her, honoring your spirit was success. So that's where she was really big on cultivating that aspect of seeing what you're into, seeing how you thrive, seeing where you know, what makes you feel joy. Where do I get excitement in? And, oh, we push that, we push that, we support that, we support that. There are aspects about my mother that I would say, oh, no, she definitely didn't do that well. Or anything. And it's funny, she'll know, like, no, that wasn't my strong suit. But she was very big on supporting the spirit. That was success to her. If they honor their spirit in life, they're successful. And if they're able to honor their spirit and be honest about that, they will take it to whatever level they want to take. Fortunately, my father, my father trusted her, what she brought to the table, and my mother trusted what my father brought in the sense that he was able to give me like the mind-body awareness connection.
Yeah.
So my father, out of fear of me getting hurt and because of his prior injuries and past stuff and recognizing what he was able to do and strengthen his mind, he said that if you can literally strengthen your mind in regards to your physicality and whatever that looks like, and it was all around like training and the mentality around training, then you'll literally be unstoppable because you recognize that it's all based upon what you're willing to put in work ethic wise. And so we were the kid, and some of the things we did as a young were probably, look, some people said, oh, it's not a little rough, a little hard. And my mother was very supportive of like, no, he knows what he's doing. And not to say, I think my father was like the original personal trainer before all this stuff. Like he'd have me running 3 miles. Before I could go play with my friends at the park and anything, I'd run 3 miles around the park.
I remember right that one.
See, down. Bob McAdoo came out of North Carolina, grew up there, went to UNC, became one of the biggest basketball players of all time. We were growing up and his son Mac, who went to Rampo High School with me, I think he went to Bergen Catholic his freshman year, played with Pat Sullivan, who actually went to UNC. And he's a McAdoo, so he was going to be this, you know, next generation, but he never was 6'11 like his dad. He was 6'4. He'd have, during the summertime, when we're all sitting there, you know, wanting to hang out, we'd have a sleepover, and he'd still get Mac up at 5:30 in the morning, and he would run with him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, like, that's just like, if you want to take it to the next level, this is what you do. And those were his traditions that he was passing on to him, simply because, like, if you want to excel and you want this,
and that
you need to
do. And be honest with you, we did like little boot camps with my dad, and he was making fun with drills and everything like that. But once I told my dad, "Hey, I'm serious about these sports," he was like, "All right, now we work." Mm-hmm. And I had
that's awesome,
like a pivotal moment and a core memory where, you know, there are certain memories with my father and my mother where I remember like fork in the road. And it like changed the trajectory for me. And we were running mileage at the local high school where I lived. And we were at two different, it was probably like 3 or 4 miles that my father would just make, because his whole thing was conditioning. And if you're in condition, like you'll be good to go. He's like, the better, exactly, you'll be good. And so we were running miles and we were on two different ends of the track. And I started to cramp. And I remember I looked at my father as such a superhero at that moment. So I would never like dishonor him by stopping. It was like, no, you're not gonna stop. You know, and it wasn't like a pressure. I didn't like want to let my dad, but it was like, nah, like I had no problem asking him, but it was like, no, he'll tell me when to stop. I'm good. So I started to cramp. And so I didn't want to stop. So I yelled out, dad. And he's like, what's up? And I'm like, I'm cramping. And I'm literally just waiting for him to say, it's okay, stop running. And I'm like, I'm cramping. And he yells out, keep running. And I'm like, I'm cramping though. And he's like, keep running. I promise it'll go away. And at that point, my mind went to like a fork in the road where I said, this can go two ways.
Right.
I can listen to you
and
this
keep
thing
running.
And keep running. And this doesn't go away. And I'm never going to listen to you ever again in my life because you don't know what you're talking about. Or I'll listen to you and I'll see how this takes me.
Yeah.
And it went away. And I remember in that moment, my brain was like, I'll do anything this man tells me to do because he has my best interest in mind. And for coaches, that's it. If coaches can understand that if a player feels like the coach has his back and has his best interest in mind, they will run through a brick wall for a coach.
Can I ask you this? Because I'm going through something similar. My daughter has got a strong leg in soccer. She wants to play offense, but she's not quick. She doesn't have the conditioning. And I say, well, if you really want to play forward or mid, you've got to be able to go back and forth. And once somebody's by you, like you're just lagging, getting back. We got to get conditioning. We got a big hill right here. I go run it like every single day. When were you? Your dad was taking you out there. You were running. Were you ever doing that on your own accord? Because
Then it got to the point where it's literally my father. So it started off with my father would like drag us, and we make it fun, drag us. And of course, every moment I was like, oh, you know. And then when I started to see the changes in how it actually was expressing itself, so every year, every sport, every season, I was coming back bigger, faster, stronger than all the kids, and I'm in better shape. And I'm like, and he'd say, watch, these kids are going to get tired. You're not going to be tired. And I was like, Casey knows my conditioning was better than everyone. Yeah. I could play a football game, and I never came off the field in high school. I could play a whole nother game afterwards. And it was just because I was actually doing so much more. Like, I was doing workouts before my Pop Warner. I was doing like practice with my pads, and my father, not really knowing football, but he understood sports.
The conditioning.
There were those videos coming out about like Walter Payton. So I was running hills with logs and with my pads on when I was young, like at a young age. And like I said, some of it was overboard, but I wanted it. And my father saw in me that like, oh no, he had a competitive spirit. It was like, okay, we can feed this. It wasn't necessarily the same with my brother. And I think he learned from kind of the mistakes he might have made in pushing my brother a little bit too hard. He waited for me to kind of say, no, I want this. Mm-hmm. My dad gave me that. And in the same breath, then my mom was able to literally keep my mind in a particular manner in the sense of what people talk about like manifestation and not thinking from a negative deficit. And that was really interesting because I think this is a lot of the space that people are now around like manifestation. Like I used to always think about like how I could heal myself like faster and everything like that. But it's because I used to take my mind and go into a particular space around what parts of my body. So my father, after every like practice and game, we would do like awareness checks of my body from head to toe.
That's awesome.
And so he would tell me, you have to basically be so connected to your body that you know the difference when something's hurt versus there's an injury, there's something wrong. And so we would have to do, you know, we'd do these checks and he would say like, how's your eye feel? Like, all right, no, my head feels fine. My neck feels a little stiff. And he's like, all right, well, do you feel any poppage? Like, you know, what does it feel? I'm like, no, it's okay. And then I might say, it's like, yeah, my knee's like clicking a little bit. And he's like, okay, well, does it feel like it impinges how you run? You're changing, is your gait changing? Like, these are all the conversations that my brother, and I was young, that my father was having with me.
He's ahead of his time.
He was. My father was literally like the illest. And I don't even think he knew why he was doing what he was trying to accomplish, but he didn't actually know how to actually do it. But he was. My father was a guru in that aspect. And then in how I talked about myself and how I thought about what I was doing, that was my mother. So my mother was very big on, we would have these mantras all over the house. and basically which are affirmations and sayings.
Sure.
And right. you kind of, so they become subconscious. Like, I didn't even realize that what they were until you get older and you start to kind of actually read them and you're like, oh shit. Like, this is actually phenomenal what you're saying in regards to, you know, positive
providing
things.
That
exactly.
Atmosphere.
Like, I have one of them that I live by is all throughout my house, my mother would have this writing that said, focus your energy on that which you want to create, not what you want to change. And it works from a sense of erasing the negative deficit of thought, because your brain doesn't understand. It only, there's no negative aspect. And we, like, for instance, I'll give an example of, you wouldn't say to somebody, don't fumble. Your brain only hears fumble. That's not actually what you want. What you want is ball security. So you would say what you want. Say actually what you want to create, which is ball security. Don't speak about what you don't like. Don't speak about that.
That's
so
amazing.
You speak positively from an affirmation aspect of what you actually want to create. Because we're not changing anything. We're just moving in a space of creation. So you would say, hey, man, I want to create a healthy lifestyle. I want to create a mindfulness. I want to create a masterpiece. I want to create a podcast. Don't say, you know what, I want to change. I don't like this. I don't like this. No, because what you're doing is you're giving energy to something you don't even like. So to give energy to what you actually do.
This is amazing.
So this is what my mom, this is how my mom spoke in regards to everything. She gave me, there was a prime example in regards to, she'll be okay with me using this, when my mom got sick when I was 15. I was at Bosco and it was like a rough time because we were trying to figure out whether I wanted to stay or whatever before I left my freshman year. And she had gotten sick. She got diagnosed with cancer. And when she told me, I was like, what? I'm super frustrated. And she was like, I was like, well, like, does everybody else know? And she's like, yeah, actually, I've told everybody. And I was like, what? She told me she was I was the last person she told. And I said, well, what do you mean? Like, why would you tell me? She's like, that's why. And I was like, well, I just worry about you. And she pulled over to the side of the road and she said, I don't need you to worry about me. She said, I have enough going on with, I have to literally change my body composition and focus on healing and focus my body in regards to a healing space, that you worrying about me doesn't help at all. She's like, now I got to take on the energy of you worrying about me?
Yeah.
She's like, no, you can be concerned for my health and we can talk about that, but worrying about the situation doesn't help it at all.
That's true.
And from that moment, literally, I never, this is one of those core, but from that moment, I stopped worrying about anything in my life. And I was like, no, there's actually no benefit to me worrying. I can be concerned. I can be actively involved in something and I can focus my energy on actually what I want. But having that didn't make any difference. And then she, another like really, 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 really beautiful moment that she gave me, changed my life in regards, changed my mind and just reinforced, was after my freshman year in Notre Dame. And I'd come home. I had a break, and I think the first semester was over, whatever, we were coming in, and she had picked me up from school, and the girl I was dating at the time was in the school. They both had picked me up, and we're driving back, and I'll never forget, we were on the cross county. And so now they're excited. They're like, yo, so tell me about your first year at Notre Dame, whatever. And, you know, we didn't have a good season. I played, but not as much as I thought I was going to play. Notre Dame, so it's hard. Like, you know, it was just like a year, like a very challenging year. And I remember I was just like, just negative Nancy. And I was like, nah, it's whack. It's this, it's that. You know, the girls are ugly. The schools are hard. Blah, 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 blah. All this stuff. And my mother pulled over on the side of the road, off the highway, and just pulled over and was like, nah, quit it. Stop. We're not going to do this. And I was like, wait, what? And she was like, no. Literally, you are, everything about you is negative right now. And she says to me, are you going to leave school? And I was like, what? And she's like, are you going to leave Notre Dame? And I said, nah, I'm not going to leave. Like, I'm going to stay. And she's like, so then you know that there are some standards and some guarantees that are going to happen. It's hard. School is hard. It's going to be hard. If you're right. not going to leave, stop complaining about it being hard. She's like, that's not a variable. It's going to be there. Like, it's not going to change. You know it's going to be hard. Football is going to be hard. You don't know. So she says to me, I don't care how hard you work. If you are working from a negative deficit, from a negative mindset, it will not work out for you.
You said something very interesting, and you know, especially early in COVID, I was just terrified, right? And yeah. I was just constantly
Understandably.
Worried, and the kids would get sick.
Yeah.
But I remember Amy saying to me, like, you worrying and having anxiety and giving yourself
it actually,
it's not going to help anything.
No, nope. It doesn't. If anything, it'll start to lean into the other aspect where we get, you know,
right.
Like, there's all types of studies that show, like, in regards to fear and what that does in regards to yourself.
Right, like, react if something happens and do something about it.
Yeah,
but you worrying if your kids get sick is not going to stop them from getting sick.
Yeah.
Your mom nailed it. And with your dad's, like, now I understand why you are a guru of health and wellness.
Guru? No, definitely not.
Are you kidding me?
Wait, are you a licensed guru?
I mean, this is it, dude. No, we have a guru in the house. This is
finally,
unbelievable.
Finally.
Like, I could sit here and just like, I need to listen to this over and over, this pod, because it's so inspiring.
I can
everything,
tell you my daughter
everything you're saying right now.
Is running sprints in the morning.
She
is. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding.
They might. Yeah, don't
I'm
say
gonna any, be your dad.
Don't say anything to me. Now, listen, I want you to know.
Ryan's actually at the sand dune every weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, it's funny. Sage actually, you know what's funny, Casey? Because we go to the track, we've been doing the track. Sage actually asked the other day, can we go to the sand dune instead? Because we haven't been in a while. So I was like, you know, yeah, we'll switch it up for a little bit.
Maybe I'll do that this weekend too. Laney loves that place.
But I want you to know that, listen, in all of this, I appreciate that you guys, it resonates. There are moments my kids and Portia want nothing to do. They don't care. It means nothing to them. So that shows you the balance in regards to it doesn't always hold weight. And you still have to figure out like how to actually navigate all of that, because literally they don't care.
How has being a dad changed who you are? I mean, your daughter saw it and said it already.
Yeah,
you know, right.
They,
so
they
there's
are,
one.
I like to say that the way I like to describe it is that they are opening aspects of me that I didn't know were even there. Like they touch like a button in me, and I'm like, what is this? And I had a dream the week before my daughter was born that I killed myself after she was born. And I jumped off my roof. I saw the birth. My daughters were born at home. And so I actually saw the birth exactly how it happened and blah, blah, blah. And my family's just overjoyed and all this stuff. And I walked this calmly, just was like, wow, this is beautiful. Walk calmly. And the only person that saw me was my brother. Everybody else is kind of just so in the groove that they're not even paying attention. And my brother's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I'm like, no, I have to go. And he's like, no. I was like, no, it's okay. And said, I have to die now. And I jumped off my roof. So, of course, I wake up. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. How I see it is, for me to actually be the type of father that I want to be to these children, a part of me had to die for another part to be born. And they continuously, my youngest is so feisty. Oh, she is so feisty, cuddly. Oh, she just wants to hug. And then she will literally want to punch you in the face. 3 seconds, Zach. 3 seconds. She is literally like on you. Oh, I'm a cuddle monster. And then like, get the fuck off me. Like, I just punch you in the face. And you have to find balance in regards to all of it, because listen, as you know, it's easy to become so engulfed in your kids. So for me, especially, like, I've always wanted, since I was a little kid, like, I dreamt of like being a dad, and ball was all that was cool. But I like, this is like, no, I'm living my best life. And I hope that I just continue to put my best foot forward in regards to working on the aspects that they continue to expose that need to be developed, because I'm a thinking dude.
Clearly.
Feeling hasn't always been my strong suit. So I think I need to feel more.
His middle name is Wisdom.
I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so, no, well, actually, my last name, well, yeah, so, yes, my last name is Wisdom.
Well, the way I know you.
Yeah, so how he knows me is, yeah, so my name is Grant, but my family's name is Wisdom. So my daughters don't actually have my last name. So my grandmother's an indigenous, so my family's indigenous on my mother's side, and a lot of the foundation of what we, like, how I was taught and how I was raised was based upon that, like, connection to earth, connection to self, and connection to family. And so a lot of it was rooted in that and love, like, unconditional, hard, we love. We don't love what you do, we love you because you do. And yeah. So in that, my family's last name is Wisdom, and it's maternal. So my grandmother and her sisters were the first women to take on the man's name. So there's only one Wisdom left in my family from an elder aspect, and it's my great uncle, and he's 90-something years old. And so I gave my daughters and started the name back over. So they're Wisdom. So my daughters are Steel Nova Wisdom and Sage Story Wisdom. And so for my 40th this year, I'm taking on Wisdom.
That's awesome.
Yeah. For my birthday this year, I'm gonna take on their name.
That is awesome. I mean,
I know it's unorthodox. I know it's different,
fantastic.
It's kind of
that's tremendous.
I'm very appreciative that Porsche was allowed it because they make all the decisions.
Oh, absolutely. One of the best parts about being a dad is the gift of life experiences. Kids won't remember the gifts they get on their sixth birthday, but they will remember experiences. What kind of life experiences do you expose or want to expose to your kids that matter?
We're fortunate. We live in a, number one, we live in an area, we live in a state. We're not doing bad. And if that's a blessing to be able to have, to be able to give our kids a lot of opportunities and experiences that so many people can't. So I don't take that for granted in any capacity. And there is the balance in that because we want to make things easier for our kids in providing for them. Because we're like, oh no, we want to be able to provide things that we didn't have. And then sometimes we end up making things harder for them because we provided so much for them in a capacity that they a lot of times don't understand resourcefulness. Mm-hmm. So I hope I just give them the experience where they feel like they could honor themselves. Like, and that is hard as a parent because we have this idea sometimes of like, oh, and you know, what it should look like or what it should, but I hope that in that, and I tell my daughters all the time, speak their truth, speak their mind, and stand up even to daddy and mommy, because if they can do it to us, then they can walk through life
right.
And be able to stand their ground, because that's what you want. You don't want them to be able to have to just conform to, you want them to be able to feel good about who they are, regardless of what that is, even if you don't agree with it. And that's parenting. Like, that's support doesn't mean that I agree with what you're doing. I don't have to agree with anything. My parents, literally, my mom didn't like football but she supported because she said this guy loves this and he's serious about it and he's willing to do what it takes to be great at this.
Then like when you see them putting in the work, you're like, I'm gonna support this.
And so I hope that they feel that they were supported in life and who they are, and that I'm learning as well.
Amen.
Like, that's it. Like, I'm not perfect. I don't try to be, but like, daddy's figuring it out just like you.
We like to end with this one. And it's, how do you want to be remembered as a dad?
Baddest mother. No. I think my ego wants my girls to basically say, oh, my dad is a superhero. What my superpowers might be, who knows? They might say, my dad had a superpower of soft. And I'll be like, no.
But no,
I think that if they just say, that's my guy, that's it. Like, I can start crying. If my daughters just say, yo, that's my guy, I'm good.
The last 30 minutes has just been exactly what I've been looking for. I got a few things going on, just trying to figure stuff out and dealing with different things. And I've just been listening to you. And like, I even wrote something down, like I can't even just go back and listen to it. It's just been profound and amazing. Like I really,
well, thank you.
I really appreciate it. My daughter's not going to appreciate sprinting, but like, just your approach to
her body will and her mind will.
And
even when she don't.
I'm emotional this week. She's going on a 2-day school retreat. Ooh. Wednesday. I'm going to be without her for 2 days. We can't even call her any of this stuff. And I'm worried.
What's the point?
That's what I'm saying to you. That's why I asked you, because there is no point. And I realized that when you were saying that, we've raised her. She's resourceful. She knows what to do.
Yes.
She's going to come back a stronger, better person.
This is the thing. The proof is in your kids. Trust who you are. Trust what you've given your kids.
I know you're right.
Because that's the all proof. Like, I don't care about any standards or anything like that, especially when you recognize that the standards right now are all over the place in regards to you have your standard as a family, core values, and foundation of what you're trying to accomplish, trust.
You're right.
Yes, that's the biggest thing. You have to trust in self so that you can trust in her.
I trust her, and I trust myself.
Well, then
you're right.
She's going to come back stronger and more independent.
And have an amazing experience with her friends and learn something about herself.
Yeah, whatever that looks like.
Don't worry.
You know what? And honestly, who knows? She might come back to the experience and say, this was trash, but it's an experience.
Right.
And that's the point.
That's right.
In that, you can say, okay, well, what did we learn from it? You know what? maybe I don't want to do it again. Maybe this is something else. You know, maybe you realize he's not really my friend. Whatever, It's just the
experience. That's the lesson, sitting down, talking with her afterwards about what she learned, what came back from it, whether it's good or bad.
And you're right. Like, I can't wait for Friday when she comes back and just to hear about it.
Yeah, so if you literally looked at every situation as an opportunity to change your brain, then you would change your brain in regards to how you think about something.
Yeah.
Because if whatever naturally takes you to that place, like to say, oh man, I'm worried about this place, and you said, oh, okay, how could I change my brain in this space? Then you have to literally change the way you think about something and your relationship with whatever the experience is. And sometimes it is. It is taking it. Listen, my brother was killed in May. And as devastating as this is, and I'm going to walk with this for the rest of my life, in case he knows, my brother was my guy, like my best friend, my other me. Literally, this is life. Am I the only person that has experienced this? No, I'm not. Literally, as we speak, somebody's experiencing this. And then tomorrow, and then every day, this is life. And if you can allow life to engage with life in all aspects and all the experiences, and allow yourself to actually take it as a lesson of like, okay, what do I want to feel in this? Whatever the experience is. Sometimes you want to feel pain. It's okay. Feel pain. Yeah. And you know why? Because pain is necessary. It's real. It actually gives you a relation to something. Pain is necessary. People who can't feel pain, it's a devastating life that they live. Those individuals that have the disorder where they can't feel pain. You need to feel pain because it lets you know like, oh, something's wrong. Feel pain. Feel joy. Feel all of them. Don't stop any of those emotions. But in the same breath, don't live in that. Because what do you want? Do you want to live in that space? No. You want to be able to move forward. And it's no different. So everything we're teaching to our kids is what we're giving them stuff. It's like, allow everything that you experience to actually reinforce how you live your life. But that's up to you. That's up to all of us, because we could get stuck up in a place where, oh, why me and everything like that? Or you could say like, oh, why me?
Right.
Just that alone.
Right.
No, just that perspective alone.
And we've all heard that, haven't we? Somebody.
Absolutely. It's like, why me? Like, why me? Versus, well, why me? Or why not me?
Right.
What
am I going to take from this?
Like, you know how some people, like, you have daughters, and they're like, oh, man, you got two daughters? Whoa, man, karma. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Or I could take the perspective of, these two little girls trusted me enough to choose me because they saw something in me that I was going to be a capable dad. See how I switched that whole thing up in regards to like accountability? I heard Adrian Peterson said something years ago, and I don't know if you're familiar with his story, but he's got a crazy childhood, like a crazy. The night before the combine, his brother was murdered. Someone asked him in regards to his success, like, how? Because for all intents and purposes, he should be a statistic based upon what his life has been. His response was, I had no choice. That is so different from what everybody else would expect him to say. If he was in jail, if he would have said, well, I had no choice but to be in jail based upon what I experienced, that would what people would expect. But because he said, I had no choice based upon what I experienced to excel, all he did was change the actual connotation and the tone around how he saw himself. That's it. There's nothing. It's all perspective. Everything we do is perspective.
My man, you have inspired everyone who's listening to this podcast, including ourselves. I know I'm a better man after today. After just sitting down, talking with you, chewing the fat.
Thank you.
And I really appreciate you opening
up. Yeah, thank you,
Ryan. No, I appreciate you.
It's healthy. It's healthy to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I thank you for the bottom of my heart to come in here and be yourself.
Thank you. Once again, I'm very appreciative for letting me ramble.
That was not rambling. We do the rambling on this podcast.
Yeah. And I'm Casey, you're true and true, man. You're a phenomenal man, dude.
He sure is.
I think about you all the time, dude, in regards to you're one of the coolest people I know.
Oh, boy.
Because you are. Well,
here we go.
Well, you know what
here
it is?
Here we go.
You're a vibe that just, man, you're dope, dude.
Oh, like, yeah.
That's true.
Exactly.
That's true. I'll allow that.
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I'll allow it.
Well
yeah,
said.
Yeah.
Well
you're
said.
Dope. Yeah.
I was telling him, man. I'm like.
There you go.
Friend of the pod shoutouts brought to you by South Bay's luxury realtor, Brooke Billings. Looking for a home to buy or sell in Manhattan Beach, Hermosa Beach, or anywhere in the South Bay? Look no further as the one who gets the best results and the most market value for your home is none other than super dad himself, Brooke Billings, servicing his hometown of Manhattan Beach and more for years.
All right, my FOP shoutouts, and I'm going to go back and forth with you here. I want to say thank you to Brian Forbes for sending me the certificate of Ohio State Notre Dame. My kids went to their first football game at the Shoe,
There's
a certificate that he went there, did that himself.
That's awesome.
Sent me
that
back
was awesome,
to
man.
Peyton Reed, Grayson Reed, the first time going to the Horseshoe with the date and the game. Very meaningful for me
Absolutely,
and my dad.
Yeah.
So thank you for that, Brian Forbes. Thank you to Jimmy Taylor listening in Connecticut, in Canton, Connecticut. Also a New Jersey high school star, middle linebacker, played for Bergen Catholic. Thank you very much. Blocked for Eric Lane at Tennessee.
There you go.
But thank you, Jimmy, for always listening and giving me the support that you do, just being a great dad and best friend.
I'm going to start with Scott Van Cleve.
Big time.
Setting up our night last week.
You better.
Feeding everyone in the South Bay, Scott.
Scott, you've done... You may Scott, put two
restaurants out of
I don't
live that
business.
Far, Scott. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't live that far, Scott.
Yeah. FOP, John Sedbury. We coach soccer together, but he also invited me. I'm going, actually, to the grand opening of Sushi Roku on Thursday night.
Wow. Yeah. So is that the one you have to pay for?
No. No, you don't.
Oh, you doubled up.
I have to wear cocktail attire. What is that?
Wow.
It's just...
Oh, well, look at this. FOP shout out to my buddy Kapil Singh.
Yeah.
I don't know if you play pickleball at all.
I do not.
So
no.
Tommy and I were sponsored by Selkirk Top of the Line Paddles. We're doing a pod where we're going to review these. And part of this is going to be we're going to rank the
top. Should I start playing pickleball?
Dude,
no, because you'll immediately be better than me.
Okay.
So no. You keep being a guru. So we're going to rank the top 25 players in Manhattan Beach. And
Kapil
he's been working on his game. He's trying to up himself in the rankings.
Let me tell you, if you saw him at the Grandview Parent Night wearing his Freddie Mercury costume.
Kapil?
He ain't gonna
anybody
be
who
one.
Has a Freddie Mercury costume, I'm sure.
He is a tremendous human being, and I love him. His wife might be better than him. And then new FOP as of tonight, Ryan Grant. I really appreciate it. I wrote your name down right here. You're an FOP now. Oh, and Casey Edgar, of course.
The one and only Casey Edgar.
We've talked about Casey a lot, though. This is the Ryan Grant episode, not Casey.
Casey, thank you for opening up us to RG and your childhood buddy that now is really has a soft spot for every dad who listens to the podcast. So thank
yes.
you for that. Really, really appreciate that. Big thank you to Randy Wilson for making his South Bay brisket.
Oh, I saw pictures.
Yeah.
It was
unbelievable. He got a Rocket Brothers brisket, and he just crushed it.
Man.
So thank you always. Randy Wilson for that. And RG, you have any shout outs you want to give?
No, not really.
All right. There it is.
Pick it up. Notre Dame figured out. Packers figured out. That's a shout
That's
out.
That's right.
There you go. God, there you go.
Sitting
Marcus
here with
Freeman,
Ohio,
come on.
I'm sitting here with Ohio State, and I'm sitting here with Michigan. We got to figure it out.
Jeez, hey, we all. No, we haven't lost yet. That's right.
That's right. We're setting up for our battle as usual. Where can we find you on Instagram?
Ryan.Grant. That's it. Ryan.Grant.
Okay.
On Twitter, RyanGrant25.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, everyone, thanks for taking time to listen to the Dad's Night podcast brought to you by the Believe Network. Please like it with a share with a friend or two who enjoy this ridiculous banter, because after all, Dad's Night is where ridiculous
becomes reality.